Hi, this is Danny Fisher. You're listening to the Mile High Show Kaleidoscope version. We are here today in the house of Robin A. Zelzenat in the Prescott, Williamson Valley area. Today, my guest is a very special guest. Thank you to Robin for being such a great advocate of the arts. I met Robin at Milagro during my tour. And this wonderful lady started talking about her dressage horses. You know, I'm a horse girl. Started talking about her two realty businesses and how much of an appreciator she is of artists. So we're here today with John Allred, who is one of the commissioned artists for Robin A. Zelzenat's party, which is coming here in April personally at her house. This lady is such an advocate of the arts and appreciates them so much that her art form is helping others to celebrate while she's celebrating. So, John, John does not have a website currently.
Nope.
He does not have Facebook currently. Now, typically, me being the marketing woman that I am, the first thing I would say is, what the hell is wrong with you? Why aren't you doing that? But also, right, being an artist, I completely understand a few things. One is the overwhelming cloggedness you get from spending so much time on social media that you can't indeed perform your art to the fullest because you're worried about getting it out there and then you could become imbalanced. Yeah. The other thing that I know is I'm so sensitive to other energies and feelings. I swear that when I know my podcast, even though I enjoy it, when I know it's just about ready to go live, I get a little feeling on my neck. Like, I know these people are watching me and they hear me and they're judging me and they're listening. Yeah. And it can be too much because you really need to stay in the flow of your creative spirit and be confident in it to go far. Now, for some of you that aren't sure about or you haven't listened to the show before, we not only interview artists and musicians and people who like to celebrate their life creatively in the creative spirit. I'm also seeking information to help inspire you, the listeners, to get off up your butts. Turn off the TV and don't tell me you're a TV watching artist.
Nope.
But get up, get off your Facebook once in a while and live in the creative spirit. Celebrate your life. If that means going to a really good restaurant and listening to some music and supporting someone else, that's still, you're celebrating life through the creative spirit. You're supporting the people that are out there working like that. If that means that you need to get up and buy a ham radio and, you know, start being a radio person or buy your first paint set and easel, whether it's Shrinky Dinks, it doesn't really matter. I want to see you doing something productive in the creative spirit. And also we talk a lot about the process once you realize what your gift is and how to keep it and grow it and still balance that with the everyday life of, I have to pay my bills. I have to make sure my car insurance is up to date.
Yeah.
All of that sweet stuff. I have to have the right brushes and they cost money. I know I just traded artwork for an infuser today. So John, where were you born? Are you a local resident or?
Yeah. So my family's been around the area for about six generations. The time when I was born, my dad was working a job over in Springerville, Arizona, which is over by Eastern Arizona, New Mexico, in the White Mountains. So that's where I was born. But my father's an iron worker, now he's a boiler engineer operator. But so we pretty much traveled for the first 13 years of my life. It was moving pretty much every 3 to 6 months.
Right.
Job to job, not in a bad way. My parents still to this day are married, you know. They're great, love them. I'm an only child. And so I got to really, you know, experience some really cool stuff at a young age as far as like being on the road. You know, having some really working class, amazing parents, and, you know, we go to the bowling alley like every, you know, Saturday, and bowling's like a family thing, you know, and listen to ZZ Top on the jukebox. So,
do you know that Pineapple actually has been living in Ash Fork?
Really?
He bought some of my pottery
at a festival
in Chino. Yeah. He's living there with it. I don't know. Now, that was last year in the fall, but he was living there helping his son babysit their kids. And he's got tons of other projects and properties in other states and everything, but he was spending some time helping his son with their grandkids.
Yeah.
And they wanted to then move to Prescott Valley. And he's like, I don't know if I want to go home or if I want to stay in Prescott Valley. But he came to a festival in Chino and bought some of my clay owls, and he was just such a down-to-earth supportive person.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, like, One time for my birthday, my dad asked me what I wanted to do, and I knew he loved him, so we went to ZZ Top.
Nice, right? Yeah. And anybody our age, like, we still know who ZZ Top is.
Right. Yeah, we're at the very last cusp of, like, really kind of being there. But yeah, for sure. Like,
right.
It was part of my childhood, and so... So yeah, we came back to Prescott when I was 12, and just about to turn 13. And so I've been back, except for like college years and traveling stuff, since about 13.
Did you, follow your dad to work when he was working with the iron saw?
Oh, heavens no. Yeah, my old man's, one of those guys that's, you know, he's got like meat hooks for hands and he's...
Mine too. Mine looks like Grizzly Adams.
Yeah, my father's, you know, he's silent and then he says something and the room stops.
Brr, so. Brr, brr.
Yeah,
I'm very familiar.
Very, very respectable man, very quiet man, you know, he doesn't really say a whole lot.
Were they supportive of the arts? Were they worried?
Mom is. Dad, it's funny because I actually went to college for not art. I went to school and got a degree in science. So that was probably the happiest he ever was when, you know, I walked down the aisle for my degree. But
security, generation too, it's not because they don't love us. They just, there's a, he wrote all these books. He was a writer. He was a EMT person, a medical guy on the emergency ambulance and taking care of people in inner city New York and the Bronx. And
you heard that. That was a recent interview, right?
Yes,
like on NPR or whatnot?
Right, on NPR. Yeah, it's an old one, but he wound up being a writer and his family was so like, oh God, when are you just going to come to work with me and do this security job? And then he became famous and started helping his parents out financially. And his dad in his older years looked at him and said, you know, we just didn't know.
Right?
We just didn't know. And like, I think all of us artists that, like some of us have parents that are artists or musicians and we're really, like they're living their eyes through us because maybe they didn't get there right away or whatnot. Yeah. And then other people have a skeptical family. And when I heard that, that thing, we didn't know.
Right.
And you're sitting there handing your parents money because you're so successful helping them in their older years. In your career, like I think we're all looking for that to be able to have. I'd love to hear my dad say, "I just didn't know."
Right? Totally. Like, what? Where did you? I've had my mother. You know, she's more than supportive. You know, my father, he's not supportive, but he's not supportive. It's kind of like you say. It's one day. There's pieces and times when when I'm working on a piece, he'll come up and. I remember he said one time, he's like, why do you do this? You know, why do you do this? Why do you struggle with this so much? Like, and cause he didn't view it at that time earlier in my, you know, I hesitate to say career, but earlier paintings,
right.
Why do you struggle so much? You know, and this is so frustrating. Why do you do this? And I'm like, no, I love this. Like that is what I'm doing. Like I'm getting through this process. And so topically he didn't understand it, but then once like a piece is finished and he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, it's like a, you know, I had to kind of break it down to him like an engineering project and be like, you know, yeah, you're gonna run into issues. You're just gonna give up on designing a car because you can't figure out like a certain part. No, you work through it. And once he saw that, he was more supportive. And then of course now with the show and stuff happening, like he's like, oh, okay, this is real. My son isn't just
right. And I have the kind of family that would, if I like my car broke down, I got loaned a couple hundred to fix my car because I was in the middle of getting my kid braces and the other one glasses, and dad would be the first one to help loan me money.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, my dad's a remodeler for all the fancy houses like Camelback Mountain, Scottsdale area. Uh-huh. And his knees are bad. He has a cadaver disc in his spine. His lungs are bad.
Yeah.
And his body hurts at this age, mid-60s. I think he's concerned for people like us. Mm-hmm. What are our bodies going to feel like when we're in our 60s? And the funny part is, I'm going to be sitting on the pottery wheel. I'm not going to have broken knuckles and broken legs.
Yeah.
I'm not having any of that. I'm actually preparing for my future.
Yeah.
And someday they'll get it. They really will, I think.
I think that part, you're right. It's really kind of, and I think that's where it kind of comes into the future. And when I kind of left the scientific field, and kind of that, grad school track doctor, you know, sort of thing.
So you're obviously, you can get good grades. You're intelligent, but your heart called you here to this.
Yes. It's funny, like kind of to not backtrack, but to talk about a little more, it was, I recently had somebody ask me, like, how did you get into this, you know? Because I'm actually a freshman again this semester in drawing class.
Eight colleges I went to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm back in my second one.
There you go. Keep
but it. I went and, you know, I had this whole degree in science and I had this experience and I worked in research labs and it was great. And I still work in the scientific field, but more part-time. It's not a career. It's not a
passion. Right. And you're also teaching others. So you're connected to your community. So it's not just like you're an artist. Like I know we talked about your piece that kind of uses the same palette as Van Gogh's, but you're not Van Gogh in a corner cutting off your ear, even though you don't have a website.
right.
And even though you don't have that stuff, you go make a living, you know, teaching children how to analyze and experiment.
Yeah.
You know, the art of science is certainly an art as well. So.
And I use my, it's funny because I bring my paintings into class and I show my students. I'm like, this is science, you know, acrylic paint, oil paint, you know, how things, how to glaze, how to use a brush, how to draw, what graphite versus charcoal. Like, I use that in class and really make those connections with, like, what is an element? You know, what is carbon? Well, carbon's a diamond. It's a piece of graphite and it's a piece of charcoal, you know? So it's very tangible. It's a great skill. And I don't think without going to school for my bachelor's in science, like, I would have the approach maybe, or maybe even the passion. I mean,
we need both sides of our brain. I mean, there's a lot of right brain stuff going on, but we need the structure of both.
Yeah.
Not every artist is one hiding in the corners, cutting off from society just to do beautiful artwork.
Right.
And again, not every artist is just completely right brained. Whether you are on social media or not, you still have to stay connected to your community, because we're amplifying the things in the community that we're experiencing sometimes.
Well, and that's, you know, to the point. Okay, so two small quick points, if I can.
Sure, absolutely.
The Facebook thing started because I ended up in my life meeting somebody that was a part of like the first 50 or 100 testers, beta testers for Facebook, back when it first started. And she told me back then, you know, this is 8, 9 years ago or so. She's like, no, this is, it's just marketing. You know, it's a big scam. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? You know, I mean, of course I'm surmising a big conversation, but... The point that she was making was, is like, eventually it's going to turn into a money-making machine with advertisements. They're using this information. They're collecting data. They're not, you know, I call it face lurk, because they're just basically like stalking your personal life to sell you stuff and to sell everybody stuff. And I hate that. And I totally respect the fact that people use it as a business tool. I've got a friend who literally is taking care of like his son, his family, his wife. And his job is a social media manager for major corporations and companies.
Right.
And that's what he does, you know? And so I have this personal opinion of like, I don't want people to not know me, but I don't want people to know me like that.
Right. And you have Instagram.
Yeah.
And what
Instagram.
Is that?
And I do the Instagram thing just because it's like, it's no, you know, pardon my French, BS. You know, there's nothing on it that is anything more than just art. It's not me talking about my life. I'm not like, oh, I went to dinner with so-and-so and look at me and I'm dressed up. No, it's not a fake life. It's just like, here's the work. That's it. You know, Facebook, I'm probably going to end up starting because unfortunately I want to do shows in, you know, I want to do shows in LA. I want to do shows in Madison, Wisconsin. And unfortunately people look at the standards. So
they want to know.
Yeah.
And this is part of the thing that we talk about Van Gogh or these other artists that like, I always tell people, I feel his brother enabled him to a degree.
Right, Theo.
Thank you. You're one of the only people that gets this.
Oh, yeah.
His dad was like, this guy's on absinthe and morphine and all kinds of crap to the point where he can cut his own ear off because he's going insane, but his brother keeps handing him money.
Right.
How does his brother know if that money was going to the morphine or the artwork? And what are you supporting? If you really wanted to help him, you would teach him how to go out there and hold his art up. There was another artist in Italy named Liha Buell, and this guy was a social mess. He was slightly autistic. His ears were too big. He lived in a cave with his guinea pigs and dogs, and a famous artist found him, saw his art, and brought him out and got him involved to the point where he then got a bicycle and ran around with his art strapped to his back.
Right?
That's helping an artist.
Yeah.
You know?
Like this, so like, to come back to it is like exactly like that's helping ours, and on top of which I hate inauthentic people. Fake people drive me stinking nuts. Dana Cohn is like a painting mentor of mine, and I went out to LA for a month, and I was like, I didn't move out there. I was like checking it out, and he told me before I left, he's like, I'm telling you, you don't got to go to LA.
It's gonna be gross there. There's gonna be some plastic lemon trees. Yeah.
And I went, and I was like, this is the worst. The people are so fake. Like, I don't want to sell myself. I'm not trying to sell my soul. I don't give a damn about buying a Porsche.
Right.
I want to create.
I
want to
feed my horses.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I want the electricity on. Yeah, I want to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But So I came back, and like, that's why a lot of that stuff is so private for me, because like this, I'm willing to do like an interview for a podcast because this is real. This is conversation. Like, people will hear our voices. Like,
right. And my boss, he's actually a photographer. He got into it. He was reporting for the paper for a while and all kinds of stuff. He's also a photographer and does weddings and all that stuff. Goes all the way to California, all the way to Colorado.
Yeah.
But he was supposed to be reporting on town stuff in Chino. And one day he's like, bah, this is boring. I'm going to interview this electrician that also plays music. And he interviewed him, and a private company had sponsored and helped him buy his equipment. And they wanted to wait to see if his show was good.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was this, that's what this is.
Right.
He had a show for the town, and the town, somebody was like, well, that's really not what we paid you to do. But here's this extra guy that wants to sponsor this idea. So, you know, go be authentic. It's scary sometimes. We hate being honest. I personally am getting better at it. I'm 41. I'm now comfortable with being middle-aged.
Yeah.
I'm slightly slower, but I also don't care if I have to tell the truth and blow someone's cover.
Right.
I used to have a problem with making others uncomfortable. I try to be courteous about it.
Yeah.
But if you have something inside, it is part of your art. It's part of your art of life. You can't just let it sit there and fester. Once you move that stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff's really going to happen for you. You have to get it out of there.
Yeah, you know? You do. You really do. I think that, I mean, I hate putting a specific number on it, but let's just suffice it to say I'm in my early 30s.
Fair enough, fair
and
enough.
And so the point on that is just to say that, like, I came out at, like, my 20s, and I went to school late. I went to college late. I tried the school hard knocks and
worked for a while.
Yeah, you know, move out at 17. You know everything, and your parents are idiots, and yeah, you run the world. And
those
are
golden moments.
I know, right? Some of those apartments, it's like, oh my god, I can't believe I used to live like that. But anyhow,
we had a beer Christmas tree, all the decorations. Right? I mean, and that's when I was young. But
yeah.
We hung out with guys that were in their earlier 20s, and we were slightly younger.
Yeah.
So they bought the beer, and we had a Christmas tree, and it was like Keystone.
Oh, Keystone Light. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 30 packs.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That place stank so bad.
Oh, God. and what was really cool is, like, my childhood growing up, like, I got my father working construction. I got to meet so many interesting human beings. I had a guy one time bend a dime in his teeth in front of me and hand it back to me. I mean, he looked like, if I could render an image of Thor, this would be that guy. You know, and other just really unique characters. And I remember we were at a company barbecue. I was five. And I was bored. I was a kid. I was five, you know, and my parents are relatively young in comparison. They're only 20 years, literally 20 years older than I am. You know, had me early. They were both married. They loved each other, you know, high school sweethearts. There you go. So I'm five. I'm bored. And this guy's like, hey, here you go. Here's a skateboard, you know, and he did an ollie, you know, just that basic trick where you get the board off the ground. And I was hooked. That was that. And I think, and I bring that up because in skateboarding, like, now, you know, I'm going on like 25 years of skateboarding.
You got to hook up with my husband too. Yeah. You might even know him, Chris Fisher, but
maybe. But it's like skateboarding, like, by nature, you have to be independent. You have to be this free spirit. You have to have the drive to hit the ground 100 times a day and get back up. You know, it ingrains in you a work ethic. It ingrains in you, like, all this passion. Like, you better love it. You're not going to do it very long if you don't love it. The first time you get knocked out, you better get back up. So I think that ends up translating into art, because how many pieces do we make that we're just like, oh my God, like, I'm never going to show this to anybody, you know? Or
you sit on it for a month and you put 8 more layers on top of it.
Yeah, right,
because we're willing to sit there and go through the pain of staring that and analyzing
totally.
And feeling what is not right so that we can find what is right. Now, I just, we interviewed earlier, because I'm superintendent of the fine arts at the Yavapai County Fair, and we interviewed the Darbys, who are very involved in the fair, and they're farm people. They're 4-H and farm people.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I brought up to a point is all these human experiences that all seem all, you know, people are buying the human experience of helping to support an artist or helping to buy grass-fed, you know, organic meat or having a, you know, buying organic food. You're paying this price for things that are our first nature of us being a human being. When we first started painting, we were painting to communicate. There was a crop out there.
Yeah.
These are how many animals we saw. Then they were gone. And then there was a storm. Like, it was our way to survive.
Right.
Now, when I had the money and I lived in Pennsylvania, I paid $14,000 a year to send my kids to Kimberton Waldorf School,
uh-huh.
which they had goats and beehives. And the kids in kindergarten didn't do academics right away because it was too early to press them, but they cut their own apples in kindergarten and made rose hip tea from the rose hip bushes.
And that's
yard.
Like...
So I'm paying all this money for, at the same time, what I learned after 1 year was, this is a lot of money, right. And I've got horses at home, and I've got chickens at home, and we have a garden at home. So you're really, like, we're not only are you getting inspired by someone else's dream and other things that your consciousness may connect to, so it's kind of like... You know, some people go get Reiki or they get essential oils. Mm-hmm. You're kind of getting essential oils of your creative spot in your brain.
Oh, fully.
But you're also, all of this work and time is to bring you back to your own growth of what the human experience originally was.
Totally. You know? And that's so, it's like, I left graduate school. I did the science thing and I was headed towards grad school and I left it. I was on a Grand Canyon River trip for 23 days.
All those times that you were doing your science stuff.
Uh-huh.
Had you already experienced and experimented with art that it was in the back of your head and you were pushing it to the side for later?
Yeah, no, yes and no. I got fortunate. So growing up skating, so I had the whole time as a skater and I, in my teenage years, in my very early 20s where I was like sponsored. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I mean, you know, this is on record. It'll be on the internet, obviously, right? But I was good, but I wasn't ever going to be like, you know, Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to be cool. You were part of the scene. You were rad. We loved you.
It felt good to your body. Yeah. But you weren't feeling driven to be part of the bling bling.
Well, no, I wasn't going to make any money. I mean, just straight up, like, I was good enough to get free stuff. I was good enough to go on tour. I was good enough to get, you know, promoted.
To feed your own soul.
Yeah. But, you know, it was like, hey, kid, you're great at skating. We love this ability of it. But you're never going to be retiring off skateboarding. You're not good enough to be the next guy.
Right.
So I kind of, my grandfather, and it's not the saddest of stories, but it just how it's happened. He got Alzheimer's and we had to put him in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And so when we did that, I went through his stuff. You know, I was like... as any, you know, family does when a member like that. And so I'm going through stuff and there was very few things that I wanted from him, you know. And one of them were the cameras. I had no idea what cameras were. I always wanted to know what cameras were. I was about like 19, 20 at this time. And I got these cameras, these old Arguses, and each one broke, like every roll. Oh. So I'd like shoot a roll, get halfway through a roll, and then the camera would break. And I'd have to like just wind the rest of it. But I kept developing them and... out of sheer luck, I had a coworker who was a photographer, and he sold me like a Nikon 35mm N65, which is, you know, it was a pretty stock 1999, 2000 35mm camera.
Right.
And I really, really got to be honest and just say I'm fortunate. I ended up meeting a friend. I worked at the hospital at this time. I needed insurance. I was skating and I was getting busted up like every other weekend. I'm
either
spraining or breaking something. And my boss is like, you know, man, it's kind of hard to do your job when you're always breaking stuff. And I'm like, yeah. So this was that turning point of, I'm not going to make it as a skater. What am I going to do? And so I started shooting photos thinking, hey, I'll be a photographer. I've shot photos as for fun. Mm-hmm. I shot, at that time, I'd done a lot of videography work making skate videos.
Yeah.
You know, I'd filmed all my buddies, you know, and they film me and stuff. And so you learn all these like tricks and this lighting and you're excited. And then I was like, I'm going to be a photographer.
Right.
So I meet this guy and he tells my friend Bill, I can't say how much I love Bill more than, you know, it's like take somebody that you admire and just like multiply it by a million. And he casually, when we first met, he works at the hospital together. He's a physician. And he just said, I'm building a dark room. You interested in learning? And I had no idea what that meant to the point of like, I'm like, what's a dark room? Because I didn't even know what photography was, you know,
but you open it up to the universe.
Yeah.
I sing and play harmonica. And I was in choir when I was younger. My dad remodeled Glenn Campbell's house, so his wife taught me baton.
Nice.
And I was around country, like good country western singers my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
So I had like a teen time when I shut off of all that and I was doing my own thing. I went to school for art, but the way I brought music back into my life was I had a gallery and studio in Pennsylvania called Clayote, and we started having open mics, and the band that was performing at the open mics was like, oh, you should get up, blah, blah, blah. So one day I'm like, you know, I used to do this. I got up. It felt good. I did it. And I just said one day, I'm like, ooh, I wish I had a harmonica. Right?
Nice.
You know, I wish I had a harmonica. Second time, you know, I've sang for the first time now in like 20, you know, 10 years or something. the next week at the open mic, that band had Old Sea Harmonica Honer sitting in their drawer that they weren't using.
Wow.
You know, and then I started playing harmonica. Like, boom. It literally is, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes we forget. We don't trust ourselves.
True.
You know, even when you're getting paid for your art, you still don't trust it sometimes.
No. There's like, so many. It's maybe less
great,
trust.
You know, it's almost, you almost get into the mode sometimes of, oh, crap. How, you know, I have this bill coming up. You don't want to go focus on that. But then when you come to the security of, yes, I do, and here I am, and this is me, and I'm on track. As soon as you start trusting yourself again and putting those things out there, they come.
It's what the artist Chuck Close said one time. I heard on this interview with him, which I totally try. It's like my mantra I repeat to myself, if you will. It's... inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just get to work.
Right.
And I it's Chuck Close. That's not me, you know? And he's right. It's like, you just sometimes, like there's times when I stare at a piece or a canvas and I'm just like, you know, yeah, you look at 30 square feet, you know, a 5x6 canvas is 30 square feet of white. And you go, all right, somebody's giving me, not even, I mean, forget money, forget all that. I mean, art is not about money. If your head in art is money, you're doing it wrong.
Right, but the people that give it to you make a difference. I have people now that buy the art before it's done, because then when you're finishing it, you're thinking about them.
Well, and this is, okay, so this is a story that Robin A., if she was here, she would tell. She loves to tell the story, and it's totally, totally true. There's a piece that obviously viewers can't see on, you know, hopefully we can get it to them.
Right.
You know,
no, I want you to describe the piece.
Yeah.
It's
so
totally
it's
fine.
Like the very first piece that happened between Robin A. and I was sketching at a local restaurant here in town. And she said, hey, what are you doing? I said, you know, starving artist practicing, got to practice. And she said, oh, I got this canvas. Do you mind taking a look? So I came out, saw it. It's 5x6 foot, 30 square feet. And you're like, okay, what do you do with that? You know, what do you do with that? You got carte blanche. You can do whatever you want. But you had better figure it out, you know, like you can't. And that's where like this like artistic idea and being an artist comes in, and where it's like, okay, this person is saying like initially like, okay,
I support you.
Yeah, I support you, but you had better not disappoint me.
Spirit into my house. Yeah,
it's like if you're a contractor, you had better finish the house, and it had better look like that drawing, and it better be, you know, livable.
Right. We didn't know that the drains wouldn't line up on the
exactly.
roof. Sorry, we're out of here. Is not going to cut it.
Right. No, and neither is like somebody that you're. You know, at this point in time, like I've been working with Robin A. and we're starting our fourth piece together. So, I mean, at this time now, we're like moving from the kind of like the, hi, how's it going, to like the friendship sort of like level, you know, where it's like, hey, what's up? I mean, I work at her house. So,
no,
anyways.
It's definitely a connection. And please tell me there's four pieces. And I've kind of felt like this was also the structure that you come from, also being a teacher and having bullet points.
Yeah.
Those are all things that matter in art as well.
Oh, yeah.
But you have these pieces, you have a science background, you teach science, and you have these four pieces, but you're also, you know, spiritually, ethically balanced as well.
Yeah.
Tell me the title of these four pieces and which one came first and how it matters to you.
Yeah, no, I can work on that. The first one was Je T'aime, and if I mispronounce that in anybody's French out there, I'm sorry.
Each one is a word.
Yeah,
one
each
word.
One. Oh, so they're kind of what they are is they're for anybody listening that art history wise, if Jackson Pollock and Joseph Albers were hanging out. Mm-hmm. And one was like, I love color, and the other one's like, I love motion, and that's me. In these pieces, I have two different styles I like to work in, but the ones we're talking about now, they're action meets color theory. And so Je T'aime and all of them are words. I write words over and over. So I'm dyslexic. I have reading is not my thing. You know, people are like, oh, this book. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Audio.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm sorry.
Which,
like,
by the way, who is our sponsor? Amazon.com is our sponsor. If you go on the milehighshow.com, it's just milehighshow.com, no T-H-E. Matt's not even here to bust my hump about that one, but I wanted to fix that and confirm that for you. You can order Amazon Audibles off of our website, so you can go on there and order them, and you'll get sometimes a free one as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so just continuing on it, it's just like what I end up doing is that because I'm obsessed with words in a way, I end up writing them, and I take canvas and I just literally write the same word thousands and thousands and thousands of times. There's a technique to it, and there's obviously all the details and the minutiae that you could describe. But I mean, to put it to a visual idea, is I block off areas, I square stuff out. I line stuff up, and there it's organized chaos. It's really like visually pleasing, but it's also just very settling. You can ground into the piece, but yet you're still pushed by it. It challenges you visually and also challenges you mentally. You see stuff in it that you might not look for. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
There's a rhythmatic too. There's a rhythm in there.
Fully. Yeah. And that's where like the word play comes in. And so to kind of backtrack to the story Robin A would tell is that the very first piece that I started, there were some friends that she had that now I know, and we're all friends and whatnot. She introduced me to, came over the first night, and we're all hanging out, and it was a Friday night. And no, I mean, when I say we had a beer, like literally we're like, each had like a beer, two beers, you know, nothing too like, you know, it wasn't a party. So we're hanging out, we're eating some dinner. I'm over here working. And so they come in the bedroom where I'm working at. It's kind of like a little setup studio in the house because the piece is really too big to travel. It's easier just to do in place. And so they come in and I'm being an artist. I'm like, oh, it's going to be this and it's got this and it's got this, you know, and really what it looked like was a giant yellow 30 square foot yellow square with a red 9-inch. No, actually, it alters. It's actually 12 inches all the way around. So it's like a center yellow with a red outside border. And I'm just kind of going off. I'm like, I love this, and it's going to be this and that. And, you know, they're nice. They're very pleasant. Everybody's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Sounds great, you know? Kind of giving you the art routine, you know? Mm. And you're like, okay. And so I left kind of like, oh, geez. So about a month goes by, finish the piece, you know, because the layering and everything, the varnishing, I come over, I hang it. The same couple comes over, but I'm not here this time. And Robin A is here with these two other people in this couple. And the male, he's just staring at it for like 15, 20 minutes. And his, you know, his partner gets up and she stares at it. And she goes, you know, after like another 5-10 minutes, she goes, you know, he did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Mm-hmm. Like Robin A knew it the whole time.
Yeah.
That's the story. When I met her in Milagro, she just said,
yeah,
this artist is at my house. He came over and there was a blank canvas with a little bit of red. And she was just, her appreciation of the process of you knowing where everything was before it was down.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the beauty of what we do. We get paid, but we are also thankful to be able to give you that experience.
Right. Yeah. And you know this from creating too. I think that if anybody that's seriously creating, artists in whatever way, you know, sculpture,
artist,
clay,
musician, people, artists.
Yes. I don't want to sound like some pompous guy of like painting.
Our medium is just whatever we gather. There's that artist in Africa that all he can get a hold of is napkins and nail polish.
And so, I mean, come on, give me a break.
Right? But don't you want to just send him a couple more things, like something better than a napkin? Is it $20 to send you like a origami paper, whatever it
is? Dude, here's a canvas and some brushes. Yeah, right.
Like, rock out.
Oh my God. And that's, I mean, this kind of is jumping track a little bit, but mm-hmm. I think in America, we're so fortunate to be, like, we as artists, you, mm-hmm. and myself, most people that are creative, we're broke. I mean, we're struggling for...
The rich man is broke. As soon as he pays his bills, he's standing there with nothing just like us. He just has wheels turning.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's fortunate, though, is there's so much, like, you know, distributed infrastructure in America that we as artists can still live well. I mean, we're still living better than 99% of the world as artists.
Right.
So in some ways,
you want to find all of us artists?
Yeah.
See you at the food bank on Wednesday.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
and
we have enough money for that beer at the microbrew where our show is, but we're working it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of like somewhat responsibility wise, like, can you imagine like the creative process and how, and this is stuff that when I see in documentaries inspires me so much. When you see somebody that's like, you know, in Africa that is, you know, grinding up their own pigments and making like, you know, skins and painting or doing their own chalk, you're just like, that person's a BA, you know, I don't want to say a bad A, you know, but
yeah,
I'm like that person, that's who I'm respecting because that is so stinking hard. Like I'm so fortunate to be able to just, I'm going to get in my truck and I'm going to drive down to the store and I'm going to pick up some paint. It's like, and you think about these cave drawings and you know, the ones that, Werner Herzog did that documentary on those ones in France, you know, and they're like 30,000 year old charcoal drawings. And
like, there's some kind of weird water buffalo looking thing.
Yeah. You know,
a couple of stick people and like some arrows. Yeah,
totally. And like
that was probably made in blood. Literally.
Right,
you know,
right.
Maybe that person's blood for real. You know?
I wonder about that stuff. It's like,
It's like, I really, like, if I had a time machine, there's where I'd go. You know what I mean? Like, what caused that to happen? Like,
how did humanity change? Because, you know, people, you know, the whole evolutionary chain, we were more cavemen, our skulls were different, our teeth were different. Once they started making art, it would be curious to know how much we changed as humans back then.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and having a science background, you know, just for anybody listening, it's in cellular molecular biology. So I only frame that so I can say, like, yeah, okay, I'm going to talk about, like, science. So I, thinking about, this is literally how it happened. I was in the Grand Canyon. I'm on a river trip and I'm looking at a tributary. It was in January of 2010. There was a huge storm that hit northern Arizona. We got found by the Park Service three times just to make sure we were alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, bad luck. I graduated in December. Jumped on the river in January and had to go through February and ended up in a snowstorm where it was literally snowing on the water in the Grand Canyon. That's like it's snowing in Phoenix, you know? I came back and I dropped out of grad school. I was like, done. Because I realized that the canyon that I was standing in was the exact same looking thing as the tributary that I was looking at, that it was flowing into the river, that I was running down, and all this circumnavigated to me just going, there's more to life than alphabet soup behind your name and studying, you know, minutiae. Not that that is bad.
Right. But being scientific.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what a lot of people don't understand. They think when people are talking about Reiki or they're talking about manifestation, you know, every hippie in the world wants to manifest stuff. Do they really do the work? No offense to own community, because I followed the dead, but I sold lots of oatmeal cookies. I didn't sell drugs. I sold straight oatmeal cookies, made my way around this country.
This is really going to make you feel better. Not like that. No,
right.
This is how
I hung out with the Hare Krishnas in the parking lot. That's what I was doing. Everybody thought I was an acid and that's where I was hanging out. Yeah. I was hanging out with the Hare Krishnas selling real vegan
oatmeal. Even
oatmeal
need
cream.
Acid if you're doing that.
Right? You're just dancing anyway. But we talk about all these things that people think are of the mystic.
Right.
Manifestation, creation, all of these things. But what I was getting to, with your scientific background, you have become an artist, you know science, but at the same time, it is scientific. The fact that the energy you put out is what you get. It's not some mystical, hokey thing, no matter what religion you are. We always talk about do unto others. We talk about karma. We talk about the golden rule of doing unto others and behaving and, you know, being conscious and courteous to the people you're around. But that is scientific.
Yeah.
If you want to be an artist, if your body's telling you to be an artist, if you want to be a skater, but your body's telling you to be an artist,
right?
You know, you have to be conscious and aware enough to listen to that. But it's all energy and it is scientific. It is your molecules. It is your particles. You can change those things
with
your thoughts, which is why I like you guys to get off your butts, go buy whatever you can, your colored pencils, go work in your garden and make your own tomatoes for once and see how much better
seriously.
They taste.
Yeah.
That is art.
Yes, it is. And that's where, like, kind of going back to the beginning of the conversation of, like, my mom. My mom, like, oh, my mom's so awesome. And my dad, too. Let me not, like, forget about my dad. He's very creative, too. He's a master hunter. He is an archery hunter. Mm-hmm. It's funny because my dad...
They might know each other.
It's like he's got... And I grew up with this, and it's not in a bad way. We literally ate off the land. My dad, we fished every weekend. We hunted. It wasn't... There's no pride. There's no arrogancy. It's like, we need to eat. Okay, do you want to eat meat? Here's how you get it.
Right. Do you want to feed a steer and pay $3,000 before you kill it? Or do you want to go get tags and go find it?
Anybody that grew up a steel worker's son knows that, it's not exactly the most posh life. Right. You're going from hotel to hotel, apartment to apartment. Like, you know, I literally had school teachers. That's why my kids, when they come to me, it's like I'm try to be just so much more compassionate than anything, because I had school teachers that would tell me, well, you know, you're out of here anyways. We know you're just here because your dad's a construction worker at this job and you're building a power plant and you got 3 to 6 months and you're out of here. So, you know, why should we care? And you go through
this. They said that to you?
Yeah. In upstate New York. It's a true story. True story. Right. And my mom, I went home and my mom's
I'm sorry, but those people are failing in their art of teaching.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. And for the record, like, I never thought I was going to be an educator or a teacher. I got kicked out of high school for trying to fight a teacher. I came back to, anybody that's local, Prescott's a small town. I come back to a town where my family's been here for six generations, mm-hmm. and they've lived, they've worked, they've loved, they've done whatever, and people know you. And here all of a sudden, here's this teacher who just for whatever reason didn't like me because he didn't like my grandfather and he didn't like my great grand or whatever.
Right.
And he tells me literally in class, I stuck up for a friend of mine. She was really sweetheart of a girl, really nice. And he started making fun of her, you know? And as we said before, like grown-up skating, like, come on. And boys, we get
right. My husband is bald and he wears a yellow helmet. And yeah. You have all these kids that are like in their brand new vans that haven't even been broken in yet. And there goes my husband. Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, back then you take him and you put him in high school like I was back then. And you're not going to take that. And I was just not going to take it. I wasn't going to be told like I was stupid and ignorant. I was like, no. You know, I stood up for my friend because the guy was being a jerk and he was just like, well, you're just an ignorant kid. He actually called me something else in front of class, which was funny because I'm like, how does this guy not get in trouble? And I do. But I was in the wrong where I was like, all right, I'm 17 and I'm going to kick his ass. And it didn't work out. But well, no, it worked out in the sense that I did that.
Could
but
you
I'm just
at least
saying,
throw like a bottled water at him or something?
I should have. Yeah, you shouldn't go after him. I went after him. And you know, I lost in the sense of, actually, I didn't lose. I really won. I got kicked out of high school, which was great.
Right?
Got my GED 2 days later.
I have a friend that
went
is
to work.
On it was on a very conservative radio station. He's really into chemtrails. And that's his, like, he's a musician. And now we're going to give him his own show called Unpopular Thoughts because he's talking about chemtrails and the government and all that stuff. But he worked for a very conservative radio station for like 15, 20 years. And he just got canned, got a ton of gigs.
Yeah.
And now he's getting his own podcast. Like sometimes those explosions are, right? Don't we wish we could have foreseen that we could have changed our path before we got that far? And that's part of the trick, you know?
Well, yeah. And it's funny because like, I got kicked out of high school at 17 and I went to college at 22. So you think there's 5 years of like living. And when I went to school at 22, like now I'm a freshman and most of the kids are like 18, 19. Like I knew I wanted to be there. I dug ditches. I'd wash dishes. I'd, you know, stood on a line. I'd stood over a hot fryer and I really knew like, oh, I'm here. I'm here to do this. Like this isn't a joke. And I took that into science, which, and science is great. I love science. I'm not trying to say anything, but what changed was me. I don't want to produce that work. I want to make stuff that literally, okay, this is just fact, right? Everybody dies. That's it. I mean, a doctor at his best, you get to go and you get to see him and you go, okay, here's my ail. He's like, okay, at best you get 15 minutes. You know, 10 minutes. Maybe.
I just went for the first time in 7 years.
Yeah.
And I had this cold, like haven't had to go to the doctor for 7 years.
Yeah.
I went for 7 years. The meds did nothing. And I'm like, I should have just battled it out with my apple cider vinegar.
What?
I tried.
So, I mean, like, and I have a number of friends that are physicians and I take nothing from the practice of medicine, but to me, my end goal, my end terminus, I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, my whole goal of wanting to be a doctor was to quote unquote juvenilely think, but still to help people.
Right.
I didn't really know what that meant going into it. So I go on and get this degree in science and I'm working in labs and I'm a geneticist and I'm working with anthrax, I'm working with malaria, I'm doing like all this stuff and I hate my life. And I realize that for me, I don't need all that. All I really need is to know that while I was here, whatever time I got, whatever time I get, that like I benefited people with whatever I created, whether, you know, it's like the same reason why I don't walk down the street like cursing and being rude. It's like, that's all the time you get, you know, be nice, offer water, open the door for the old lady, for the old man, for the young boy, for everybody.
Right.
Like don't exclude anybody, you know? I've been fortunate enough that some of my family members, although I'm Caucasian white, you know, like they've married other ethnicities. You know, and it's awesome because my cousins, we get together and it's like a rainbow of awesomeness. You know, we go out and people freak out. They're like, you guys are related. And it's like weird because I'm the only boy.
Well, have you found, and I'm just going to go ahead and bring up the white elephant.
Yeah.
In this area particularly, it is changing, but there is still, I live, and I don't want to down Prescott, where I was in Pennsylvania, I was in Boyertown. Uh-huh. There's huge KKK underground population in Boyertown.
God.
The same corner my shop was on was where they were doing their rallies 7 years beforehand, and I had yoga
not good.
And belly dancing and open mics and pottery wheels on the same corner where that used to happen. And over the years, it's changed, but you can still feel the white elephant.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've heard all kinds of things from my quote unquote, you know, local friends that have lived here for a really long amount of time that, you know, they may not be, they may call the rodeo, they may think that the rodeo is more aristocratic, white, not necessarily white supremacist, but that primarily when you get into this old cowboy mode, you're looking at, you know, generally you think you're thinking old white folk that have, you know, old money.
Right.
You know, that there's this whole thing going on. But, but we live, you and I have chose, we're aware of that.
Yeah.
We know they're out there, and those, just like the kid.
Yeah.
Just like the old lady that you're opening the door for.
Yeah.
They're still part of your connection.
Yes.
Not to hate those people.
No.
But to live in the light. Yeah. To make sure that you surround yourself and your environment is different, because that does shed to them. Inadvertently, I'd like to believe that just you living in your process is shedding to them.
Exactly. There's, you know? I mean, I wish people could see, and you saw, I do have, besides this abstract style, I do make some pointillism, realism, and none of my figures are human looking as far as their skin tones. I purposely choose colors that don't represent anybody's specific skin tone.
Right. And what I love about your artwork is when you do classical, if you're here at Robinae's house, she has another artist. What's the other artist's name that has like Bowie and the Beatles and...
Lauren.
Lauren.
I'm sorry. No, Lindsay.
And
Lindsay.
Forgive me for not completely promoting this party, because it's more by invitation, but about it.
It's not even by invitation. If you hear about it, just show up. We just made invites so people could put them on the
fridge.
This
party is at Robinae's house. It's 4740 North Fremont Drive, Prescott, Arizona, 86305. This party is April 9th, 2016, 5 to 9 p.m. at her house. Gluten-free Asian fusion cuisine designed by the Raven Cafe's Kevin Walsh. Wine and cocktails created by Skylar Reeves of the Barley Hound. And an acoustic performance by Mystic Harvest from Flagstaff. So Robinae went out of her way.
This
was not planned. I asked if he enticed her and was like putting a bug in her ear to have a party so it could get him all kinds of attention, or if she's just a party animal and wants to party. No, this was natural manifestation of honoring the creative spirit in this house and all the people that she supports and has on her walls. So it's not just your artwork. There's four different artists.
Right. Well, there's... For the show, actually, she's been great because Robinae's collected for a while. So she has a number of other artist pieces that she owns that we're taking down. Not in a bad way, but just to show more of Lindsay and I's work.
Right.
Which some of the pieces in the house, there's actually one that you'll, if you make it and attend, that you know, you'll see that was actually created using the color palette of another piece of her collection. So I did make a piece that matches one of her collections. So when you come, it's actually... two of us primarily that are showing with painting. There's another Skylar, not of the Barley Hound, as far as the one that's on the invite. There's two Skylars, which is...
But he's an artist, this other one?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And so when you came in, remember some of the pottery? The pottery here?
Yes.
He's going to be showing us some of his stuff as well.
Nice.
He's right now kind of in a transition period of moving, and so he had time. It was hard for him to commit. Basically, to you know, and you move and life happens and stuff. So, but still, he's going to be at the show as well. So, there's technically three of us.
Mm-hmm.
Two of us are on the flyer and the bill. And like I say, we made flyers because you as an artist, I'm sure you can understand.
Right.
You forget stuff pretty easily. I mean, you get so wrapped up in work. I can't even, that's another thing.
I can't even remember
to update my Facebook.
I'm going to let you look at my calendar for a second.
Yeah.
But my dog literally ate my other calendar, so I have been missing things.
Oh my goodness,
yeah,
look at that.
Yeah, this is me. Plus I have two kids, two horses, four dogs.
Oh, wow.
And we're a one-car family. So like if I lose this.
Yeah, game over, right?
You don't know where I'm going to be. And I'm not making any money either because I was supposed to be painting windows at 9 a.m. and I have no clue. Yeah, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
I'd like to repeat things to myself thinking I'll remember them as like part of the rhythm of everything else I'm doing. Uh-huh. But no.
No,
so
yeah.
So that's why you have your flyer.
Totally. Yeah, no, that's it. And I've gotten that a few times and it's fun. You know, people are like, oh, because they're like, oh, is this an invite only? It's like, no, it's not an invite only.
No, and now...
And the biggest... Sorry to interject. But one of the biggest misconceptions that it's, like, been interesting to, like, kind of overcome is that people expect that, like, it's an art show to sell art. Like, if they don't come to buy art, that they can't come. And it's like, what? No. People that want to buy art, buy art. We're throwing a show to celebrate creation. You know, it's
that's
everybody.
That's why breweries and restaurants are better than galleries for my selling, because when you're hearing the music and having a beer with your meal, you're relaxed. That's why Tiffany's, which does all the fancy glass, offers champagne and chocolate.
Yeah.
Now, they're wanting to sell stuff, but
totally.
Scientifically, once again, how your natural life is scientific.
Right.
Scientifically, the chocolate and the champagne do something to your brain where you feel like good things are going to happen. So you're manifesting good. So you pull out your wallet and you buy this glass.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what this is for.
Yeah.
So it's a nice side effect of just living in the creative spirit. Yeah.
Totally. No, I agree. I agree. And it's like, I had a friend the other day, and I was talking, and she was like, you know, I can't afford your work, you know? And I'm like, okay, yeah.
Right.
Not everybody.
What do you
want to
trade?
Yeah, you know.
Right?
Or yeah, what do you want to trade? But she's not artistic. She was more worried about coming to the show. And I just said, no. I said, reality sets in, and you go, you need 150 people to show up to tell 1,000 people, and then hopefully 5 people buy a piece.
Right. That's about right.
And it's the reality of it. I mean,
if I get 20 inquiries on one painting, it's soon going to sell.
Yeah.
Like, if I get 20 people that, how much is that? I really like that. That's super awesome. Nobody's buying it. Usually by the 20th one, it leaves my life. Yeah.
I mean, and you're right for you know, kind of talking about Robin A. And her patron of the arts, because she really does take risks. And she's like, okay. I mean, she really, you know, that's part of the beauty of the story earlier where it was like, oh, I had this vision and this idea. And yeah, you're right. In my head, it was laid out. It was done.
Mm-hmm.
But in her head, it's like, all right, kid, I see a big yellow square, you know, and then, you know, 6 weeks later it's done and it's on the wall and it's like, you know, and now it's like every time I come over, she's still, I mean, each piece that we create together, cause I don't know how this would be with somebody else. You know, let's pretend like, I don't want to say client. Let's Bob. Whatever. Bob's an easy
name.
Sure. Right.
So he's Bob, an innocent guy. You can spell his name backwards. It's all
right.
The same.
So Bob shows up. I'm not sure what that relationship would be like, you know, but I'm hoping it would be something like this where it's like, hey, man, I know that I trust that you're going to create what I don't know I need for the wall.
Right.
And that's
it's
where Robin
like
A. and I are
Mortimer
at.
Farms.
Yeah.
Wants, you know, more springtime windows. We're painting their windows. You know, I paint their windows. They want springtime. They want bunnies. I offered a jackalope for instead of an Easter bunny. And they were like, whoa, that's a little far stretch because that's not really our style. But then the same day I went down the road to Jackass Bar and Grill and I got a mural job where I'm painting murals, drinking beer and playing pool.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Couldn't take that to Mortimer.
No.
I'd get fired.
You're right.
Couldn't take Mortimer's
right.
Butterflies and Sunshine to Jackass
nope.
Bar and Grill.
Exactly.
Not gonna work, right? So it is kind of being a people artist on top of everything. I want to bring you back on track because I wanted to talk about the four names of your pieces and how that attributes to things. And then after that I wanted to talk about how you take ideas like Michelangelo and other famous pieces of art, but you don't just regurgitate them like we're taught in art school.
No,
you bring them into the now.
Yeah.
So first the four names, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yeah. So the four names, there's Je T'aime, again, sorry for the French. There's Gravity, there's Hope. And pretty soon it's actually, I hate seeing the fourth one because I'm actually going to be not a jerk, but I'm going to withhold the fourth name.
Okay.
Only
if you want to know the fourth one, you get here on April 9th.
Well, no, it's not even for that. It's for Robin A. Robin A and I have this thing and I never tell her what the word is until it's done.
Okay.
And since the fourth one isn't done,
I don't want to
jinx it. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe that's years of just skating.
Je T'aime,
like,
Gravity, and Hope.
Yes. Yes. And a fourth one to come, which will be Hope. it does have a name. Yes, it does have a name. But I don't know.
And they were about all painted at different times for different pieces. She didn't commission you to do four. She
no.
Commissioned
each one
at a time and then brought you back.
Yeah. I think, you know, like anything, it was, okay,
she obviously hates
one.
Your work.
Right, yeah. Right. So it was like, now, at this point, with the fourth one, we just had a conversation the other day. She was like, yeah, and I was like starting to tell her about it like I do. And she's like, no, I want to hear it. And I was like, well, what do you think? And she's like, look, I know you're going to make an amazing painting. Just go do. So at first, it was more like, yeah, okay, like kind of making sure. Like I wasn't just some...
Soon you're on autopilot.
Yeah.
Soon it's just going to be like, I'm going to do what I want if that's okay.
Well, I hope so.
Right?
I mean, that would be awesome. And thankfully that... And Robin A. said this to me the other day, which was really, I don't know, comforting, which was, you came in here and you created artwork that I didn't know I wanted, that I couldn't see hanging on the wall, and you did it quickly. You did it well for a fair price.
And you didn't stain the floors.
No, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And everything you said you were going to do, you did. And so as much as like an artist is like, and you know this, as much as an artist is like, yay, I get to create, I'm in control. No, there's a business side. You know, you've got
to
be.
No, and there are days that you're like, especially if you're sending like this piece that's in my car, I'm bartering with a friend, with a lady who sells essential oils and a diffuser for my house. And we've had a cold, so we want this. So we traded an equal trade with this artwork, which I would have bought the diffuser anyway.
Right.
So
right.
I'm just basically paying my bill with,
yeah,
with my art. I posted all these paintings as I work. I post them. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of butterflies, different kinds of butterflies, dragonflies, and the piece wasn't finished and they purchased it and wanted it before it was finished. So I'm sitting there painting last night, sending her pictures as I go. And she's like, I love it. And I'm sitting there going, oh crap. I added four more, you know, flying hearts. And she didn't know that was going to be there. Your brain still is,
yeah,
through your process, checking in to be courteous.
Oh yeah.
You gotta,
oh, yeah,
be courteous with that person. And there, oh, yeah, are moments that when you're waiting for them to get back to you, you're like, oh, should I, yeah, wipe it off? Did, no, I, right. You know, how do, yeah, I, and it's like the same, you know, I waited tables for a long time. You want to make, yeah, sure you don't forget the pepper when,
right,
you're doing their,
yeah,
salad. You don't,
exactly,
just throw the salad in front of them. You want to make sure if there's pepper that you give, offer them crushed red pepper. You want to make sure the silverware is in the right place. There's not extra dishes. You,
right,
can do it either way, but you're going to get another dollar or two if you do it.
Yeah.
Right, you know?
Well, yeah. And, oh God, that brings up so many good points. Yeah, it's like everybody. It's like I was super fortunate, kind of backtracking a little bit, with my parents and pardon me.
Bless
my family dynamics and everything. Having this family that's like so multicultural and just like really rad, mm-hmm, and just super rad. Everybody loves each other. You end up everything ends up getting into this melting pot, you know, mm-hmm, and you end up seeing that like it's all connected. We're all related. Like if you don't like one person, you don't like everybody in a way, you know. And
right.
True, there's people that just suck out there. But
right. There's people that you can love from a distance.
Yes.
And sometimes,
yes,
you kind of have to push them a little.
Yeah,
into
you do.
I'm not pushing you off
you
the
do.
Cliff.
Yeah.
Just way over there.
But when you start creating art and you start putting you on canvas, what ends up kind of being interesting to me is just that, like, I didn't really understand it at first, but now I get it better. It's like, no, you're putting yourself on that canvas.
Right.
You know, it's not like at first when I first started painting or whatever, it's like, oh no, it's this idea and you're copying. And so, like, leading into like what you're saying about like the other works I have where like I'm using these classic sculptures, I'm using these classic ideas and transforming them into, you know, my own take, it ends up you seeing the scope of yourself, and it's like, what don't I want to be? Well, I don't want to be excluding. I don't want, you know, I want to be able to take my art to the streets as much as I want to take it to the museums. And, you know, I'm not dumb enough to say anything about my street art on the air, but,
right,
but suffice it to say, like, I travel and put stuff up under a different name.
Are you coming to the Chalk Walk? Chalk It Up.
Yeah, well, so that's funny you should bring that up. That's actually one of the first events I ever did in, you know, in
person. This area, you were a sponsor.
Yeah.
I'm a sponsor artist this
year,
so.
Yeah, and that was one of the first places I got to meet, and I totally want to say his name on the air because he deserves the credit, Dana Cohn.
Okay.
That guy's amazing. He's a brother from another mother. I love that guy. And I had studied his work all around town for probably a good year and a half, 2 years at various shows he would have. I thought he was a she. I mean, not in the bad way. I mean, just Dana just was like, all right, you know.
I'm Danny and my husband's Chris, so we can either be two girls or two guys. Right?
Yeah.
It could go either way.
You know what's great is like, I was like, when I called the very first time I saw your card and I was like, is it Donnie or Danny, you know, and then your voicemail is like, hi, you've reached Danny. I'm like, oh, okay, Danny, cool. All right, cool.
It's hard to say.
Right. I was like, Donnie or Danny, the double N, you know, always, but I'm bad at reading. So anyways,
it's
I write words, right? How dyslexic fun is that?
Back to, okay.
Yeah.
You've
sorry.
Got,
off track.
Who's the other, no, it's all good. There's the Michelangelo piece, David,
yeah,
which is your piece personally, uh-huh, which you enjoy. And then there's the other one with the lady. I don't know which one is she yeah, Venus or?
Well, actually it's actually just based off of a sketch I saw.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even Venus. What I was trying to actually capture was just kind of that Greek Roman sculpture style, but with a proud feminine figure. I am.
She's a curvy girl. She's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, if I'm going to use the female form, I want it to look good and not in the sense of like beauty. No, I mean, you could, it's not about shape. It's not about size. It's about rendering. Yeah, form and rendering it well. The piece I tried to, and I included, which somebody actually critiqued on it recently, I included a red blanket on it. Like she's holding a blanket and she's standing. The piece is 30 by 40 and she herself is 36 inches tall. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of holding a blanket. And what I tried to do was paint her in a sense with a pride of womanhood, of femininity, of being proud of being a woman, you know? And I think it's great as a man. Like, I think too many men want to say, oh, I'm a feminist just to go along to get along. I respect everybody. And what I wanted to do was create a piece that used the female form that showed respect to the form.
That we are different, right. Respectfully.
And so yeah. I tried to paint her in not a matador sense, but in that sense of like, hey, here I am.
You could go ahead and take that and talk about the Middle East and right. You know that she's just holding it.
Yes.
I have this option.
Yes.
I can cloak myself if I wish.
Right.
But I'm choosing not to.
Because I'm not a woman. Like I don't, there's certain things, I've had this conversation with a couple of people. There's certain things like, that as a white American male, you just need to be conscious of. You had better understand your place and your history.
If you want my respect, you do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Like, you'd better get it. And whether you had made transgressions or not, you had better understand where you stand. And I really take that into history that, like, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to upset females. I don't want to upset any other races. I don't want to piss anybody off. What I'm trying to do is celebrate beauty in the broader context of life.
And you also can accomplish all of this even with very provocative pieces.
Yeah.
If you know your audience and you're just being conscientious and courteous to who you're working with.
Right.
So you have the freedom.
Yeah.
Courtesy first.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had better, you know, and some of the stuff that I'd like to do, I've painted a lot of feminine features that would be considered more ethnic, but right. I always make sure I do it in like turquoise, or I'll do it in like bright pink or something like that. And I do that on purpose to just be like, you know, we're everywhere. We're all connected. We're all dirt. I mean, as a scientist,
stardust.
Yeah, we're all stardust. It's like, right. I tell my kids that I teach, you know, I'm like, look, do you understand that what is happening on the sun? We're made of that same stuff. It's just different arrangement.
Eve Smith is one of the artists that is having a show at Granite Mountain Brewing this fourth Friday of April.
Uh-huh.
Eve Smith and Sherry Oriana Meadows are having a show. But Eve is, she likes to work out. She lives in Chino. She's really good in her garden and we're friends. And
yeah.
One of the first times I met her is she was talking about, she's like, she saw it somewhere. She's like, scientifically, we are oxygen. No, we are water.
Yeah, 70%.
And iron.
Yeah, yeah.
When you add oxygen to water and iron,
It rusts
and dissolves.
Exactly.
So basically, we're spending,
exactly.
You know, a some odd 80 years of our life
rusting,
sitting here rusting and dissolving. Yeah. So what are you going to do with that time?
Yeah,
great.
You're oxidizing. You're constantly oxidizing. You're constantly. I mean, death is.
Well,
not
you're in mid 30s, but wait till you get to the middle age. It's awesome.
Right.
When you get your gray hairs, you're like, maybe they'll respect me.
Maybe they'll respect me.
Think I'm actually. An
I'm not going to get carded for beer anymore. Yeah.
Also, so you have this one piece, and then I forgot about the thinker downstairs. The point I'm trying to bring on, and you're on the Mile High Show Kaleidoscope segment, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, if you want to find other episodes, it is milehighshow.com. So if you want to look up other episodes of other artists and musicians that we've inspired or that are here to inspire you, just look up milehighshow.com. When we go to college for art or school to art, one of the things they said all the masters learned was to copy the masters before them. And it does teach you about form and line and confidence in your mark. It does teach you all those things, but it's tedious and boring.
Oh, yeah.
And Monet was such a, you know, in that time when everybody was copying the masters and just repeating the masters and getting better and better at the traditional style, Monet was another one that was like, oh, guys, this is Impressionism. Hi, here's something for you to think about.
Right.
You know, and kind of changed it. But it was important to use the masters, and what you've done in these pieces, I want you to describe them, at least David and the thinker, the new names for them, and how you've taken those original historical ideas, but you've placed them in the now. You've actually brought them all the way forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
So studying Rodin and sculpture and everything, you know, it's like I was saying kind of earlier, like, you got to know your place and time. And I'm impressed by a lot of stuff, and especially sculpture. It's just something just magical about sculpture to me. It's beautiful. I don't want to sculpt. I love painting. I'm a painter.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Something different. I love Judy Larson and Bev Doolittle, but their paintings, you could see every single hair on the horse or the dog. And my painting style is totally opposite of that, but I so appreciate their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's things that I've always been fascinated with, especially like the classics, like Da Vinci, Michelangelo. Like, I just obsess over that stuff.
Right. And you're very Da Vinci like in having the scientific side with the artistic side. It's the balance of the body when he drew that body.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do was take like these ideas. And so I was saying earlier, like, out to LA, you know, for like a month, and I ended up just kind of, not the people individually, but just like the whole thing. I was just over it. I really detested the whole scene. And so I came back and I was at the time reading Dante's Inferno. I got this like translation. It's like the easiest one or whatever to read. And I was like, okay, I'm going to read Dante's Inferno. So I'm reading Dante's Inferno, and like, I just come back from LA, and I'm like, that place is Dante's Inferno. Like, oh my God, you know, like, this place is like hell on earth, like, in ways, like, yeah, there's stuff going on, but like, it's so
people
crazy.
There are real zombies out there. There's real people that are just completely blocked off from what is real and what is true.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but we see them. Yeah.
Fully. Like, I remember, like, I have a road bike or whatever, and I would ride around the city and just like check stuff out and like look for street art and look for graffiti. And I was just like, man, there's so much suffering. Like, this place is like so rough. And like, I worked with this guy, and he was really great. And he was from Mexico City, and he was Hispanic. And I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to move this part of LA. And he was just like, he's like, no, you can't. And I was just like, what? And he's like, no, you can't. They'll seriously, like, you know, they're going to take your car. They're going to, you know, and at the time I was living in Compton. And so I was like, well, it's got to be better than Compton.
Right?
No, you're...
I'm from Compton.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm like, I'm living in Compton right now. And like, I am very, very, I mean, just plain and simple. Like, I'm not albino, but I'm tipping the scale.
I don't mess around. I'm from Compton, basically. Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know, come on, man. Like, and he's just like, no, like, you can't live here. Like, you're white. Like, and it's not your neighborhood. Like, you can't move here. And he was really, he was really honest with me and just amazing. And I just hated that. I hated that, like, people just couldn't be people. Because he and I at work were best of buds. And we were awesome. And, like, we would text and we'd have a good time. And we'd go to lunch together. But then I was just like, yeah, dude, I'll, like, move to your hood, you know, if you will. And he was just like, no, you can't. And I hated that. I was just like, why can't people just be people? And art is art. And so what I did with The Thinker was I took the idea from like a side pose of Rodin, you know, I mean, and there's the applying the art history part where it's like, it's a study of triangles. It's a study of like proportion and, you know, all those rules that are unspoken, but that exist. And what I wanted to kind of convey was basically Dante's modern Inferno.
And it's The Thinker sitting there thinking with flames.
Right. Yeah.
And so, that's probably how you feel when you contemplate putting yourself in the shoes of all these lost people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I went and then the background, I mean, the background took me like probably a good 2 months because I just kept layering and layering and layering all these different spray paints.
And it helps you come to terms with what you hate too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. For sure. And like, it helps you to, I don't know, I don't want to say appreciate because that's the wrong term, but sympathize, have more empathy, not hate as much when you like put this effort into something creating, trying to reflect
accept,
this image.
To be able to accept, because we all talk about, there's a lot of talk about accepting people as they are and loving them, but there's still a lot of, as I said before, loving them from a distance.
Right.
There are people out there that either are non-supportive of the arts or just non-supportive of you, or it's just a cultural difference that we can't all get along, but we can still love them all. But sometimes it's about coming to terms with loving them as they are.
Right.
And sometimes art can just be that simple.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I just, it's not a judgment. Like, so the piece basically is, the title is Dante's Modern Inferno. And so I took like all these modern colors, like acrylic paint, really modern. Obviously, you know, the colors, like the palette, all that. And I put it in the background. And then I took
historical colors and oil paint and put that as the subject. So it's like, here is the old judging the new. Here is...
And here's oil and water again.
Right.
We were talking about that, just the scientific background of using oil and water and what it does. But then think about culture and society and oil and water, because there's Trump and Bernie.
Right.
You know?
It's
no more oil and water description is necessary.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, here's real life playing out, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, I can't predict the future, but thankfully, like, my art reflects humanity, which repeats itself, I guess, you know? It's like
Ben, and you have both sides. You've got these pieces that you've done for Robin A that are about color. I mean, you can take 3D glasses and check out these paintings and try not to fall over from all the stimulation.
Right?
There's patterns of color, which is where he's repeated letters and words over and over and over.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you have this. And Robin A's house is very, basically a lot of black and white and gray. It's very neutral. It's very not a lot of color, which her home accents his bright artwork, but yet his artwork accents her house, where he's brought color into this black and white environment. These pieces that are going to be here on the 9th that aren't Robin A's that are available for purchase are different pieces that have black and white in them. But if you look closer, there's all this color.
Oh, fully. Yeah.
But it's kind of the neutral side and more historical side. And you're bringing these things such as the thinker with flames into your experience now.
Yeah.
In LA. And then you have your piece, David, which one was the one that you said was the same as Starry Night? That was the lady that was cloaked, right? That was the same palette as Starry Night, but it does look black and white from a distance.
Totally, totally. Yeah.
David looks like he has constellations behind his head. I don't know if you did oil on water on there, but you've got David.
I did.
He's smirking. So he's taken, you know, David. We've seen David there with contrapposto, you know, constantly contrapposto. You learn it when you're 16, you hear it again in college. And that's what you see every time you look at a painting of somebody's beautiful Greek body or whatever. They're standing in contrapposto, one shoulder's down a little lower and one hip's the other way.
Uh-huh.
So we've got all this, but he's got this piece of David's face and David is smirking.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, he's going, I know you're looking at my thing. I know I'm naked, but you know what? This is modern times and here I am. How are you today? Like, but you've taken something from the past. Like, we've seen Mona Lisa smirking and we've seen how people alter it. You've taken these things, put them in your own style and kind of place those characters into our modern environment, which I think they should go far. I think you should get them back into LA where they belong.
Well, thank you. That's an amazing compliment. I really, honestly, because I mean, that's what with it trying to just, you know, like I say, push myself, do something different. I think the biggest thing I want to accomplish in art is that, I don't know, harken back to a show I saw in LA, Caravaggio. Like I just,
and he did the blacksmith too. Like there's a horse one. He did some horses and some ladies.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Uh-huh. I just, it was arresting, you know, kind of harkening back to like the idea of science. If I get 15 minutes of somebody's time, you know, as a physician to impact their lives, like, yeah, you're right. Cool. I can write a prescription and here you go. That's a valid, very beautiful thing. Well, what if that 15 minutes instead, like put them in another place?
Yeah.
Put their existence, whatever they were going through, whether it was heartache, joy, whatever, and put them in a place of like such contemplation that they're outside of it. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I guess I should walk again. You know, I should look at the next painting. And that's what I'm going for.
You're moving things through them. If they were stagnant before, like you may change their ideas. They may have already had ideas that are, you know, but you're moving through them.
Yeah. And so I want to be respectful to everybody. I want to create not beauty in this idea of like, you know, supermodel, whatever, Kate Moss sort of thing. No.
No, like, offense to Kate Moss.
No offense to Kate Moss, of course. I mean, you know, she's beautiful as well.
Right.
But I'm just saying beauty in the sense of like pleasing to the eye and respectful to everybody. And really with my figures, you know, I love Van Gogh. I'm doing a bunch of interjections here, but
it's okay.
I really dislike when people go, you know, they know something about art and they're like, well, Van Gogh, blah, 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 blah. And they don't like Van Gogh. And I'm like, why? Why not? You know, I mean, it's beautiful. But then,
and I've heard other people that when I say that he was enabled by his brother, they're like, what do you mean his brother supported the arts? And I'm like, it's so much deeper than that.
Yeah. And then you end up finding out that it wasn't even just his brother, that it was his brother's wife after his brother died, 6 months after he died, that ended up publishing his letters, which got everybody interested in his art. It was his stories between him and his brother that got people interested in the work.
Right.
I mean, that's the passion that people went like, oh, wow, like this was a person that had a life that was trying to like emulate that existence on canvas and represent it in his own way and do his own thing. And then these letters that got people interested in, like, you know, these letters, if you will.
I know, if you go to
but you know what I mean.
Well, and more on that, same thing as those letters. Just like I took pictures, photos of your work area with the splashed, you know, tarp and your pieces where you experiment on that are going to become a whole wall of art.
Yeah.
I've seen your process there. If you go to the Louvre, they have Van Gogh's palette with the brushes smashed. And we're talking, you know, I was an art teacher for many years and you're supposed to take care of your brushes and give them good hair days, right?
Yeah, you get marked down if you don't take your brushes and care of them.
But I know when I paint, I go through brushes because I'm dumb enough to leave them in the water sometimes because I'm so damn passionate it's on my jeans.
Guilty. Yeah,
I'm know, but at the same time, they have under glass his palette with brushes just destroyed and smashed into it with piles of paint that he was wasting.
Yeah.
And they have that whole process there. And you're right.
Yeah.
Like, those things really mean something. And, you
it
know,
does.
Now, Chihuly,
right,
who's in Vegas and everywhere and has all those things that you.
Beautiful. Make, yeah.
He has a team of 100 people. So it's
right.
Not just
how do
him.
You.
But when you walk, like, it's still that experience. Yeah. You can do it on canvas.
And that's when, like, I again, harken back, like, okay, so, I mean, on record, for sure, like, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Caravaggio, like, those guys, I just, like, to me, sometimes when people talk to me and they're like, talking about science, and I'm, like, trying to teach them about science, and like, I don't get it, you know? I just want to tell them, I'm like, okay, when you talk about those guys' art and like how they did it, I have no idea. I'm so confused about their genius of how they created this stuff. And it fascinates me. I love studying it. You know, like physics and art are like so similar. I mean, you think of like, you know, the Renaissance and like how you have geometry that pretty much changes like how art was made. And you go from like mosaic to like three-dimensional. And I think it's Giotto, G-I-O-T-T-O. If I mess that up, sorry.
No, all good.
To any art historians out there. But like you got like the first three-dimensional representations in like the 1300s right around the same time as Dante's writing the Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put that like in scientific context and you're like, okay, well now in the 1600s you got Newton and calculus. And now all of a sudden we go from geometry to calculus and, you know, and then you've got like algebra thrown in there and then you put in like calculations and how they were you know, basically describing the existence. And so you had artists and scientists both trying to like figure out the world. And now we're at a point, like as someone who was a molecular geneticist, it's like I used to send off emails with genetic code to have sequence sent back to me. Like literally DNA. We didn't understand the structure of DNA until like 1955, and you got Watson and Crick and they do this research and they propose this model and, you know, it's like, and now you can, over the internet, through an ether of air and atmosphere to a satellite, within 5 minutes send a genetic code off to have it sequenced to then come and reproduce DNA.
Right, but meanwhile, we're back here in Prescott painting art in Robin A's house.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I mean, for real, you're talking about what you're doing in the transaction.
Yeah.
But it is
It's the exact
similar.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing because the creative process of, like, you're going to do this in science is the same thing that goes on to canvas.
It's communication.
You know, it's communication. It's getting it through. It's making it happen. And
it's a multidimensional. Like, when Jonathan Best recently told me he had a pile of work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? Mine's a multidimensional mound. Like, you know, it's a multidimensional
mound
of trying to figure out its life. And
that's
all it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's art. That's what we're talking about.
Fully.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and plug this event. It's on April 9th at Robin A's house here in Williamson Valley. It's 4740 North Fremont Street, Prescott, Arizona, 86305. Do not drink and drive. Have a designated driver.
Definitely.
Come enjoy some music from Mystic Harvest. Skylar Reeves from the Barley Hound will be here with cocktails and wine. And there's gluten-free Asian fusion cuisine designed by the Raven Cafe's Kevin
delicious.
Walsh. And guess who else is going to be here? Jonathan Red. I messed up. Allred.
No,
John
no.
Allred.
Yeah, Jonathan Allred. Yeah, and then for sure.
So he's going to be here. His Instagram page is
Jonathan Lee Allred. I just put my middle name in there.
Okay, so you can check out his artwork on Instagram.
Yeah.
If you want to be a sponsor of the show, or if you want to send me a guest, you can find me, Danny Fisher, on Facebook. I also have the Mile High Artist League, which is a collaboration of artists, and we run events together. And you can also email milehighshow.com. So thank you very much. I look forward to the party, and yeah. I look forward to getting these photos up so people can check out some of your work.
Yeah, and thank you. I appreciate the time.
Sure.